utilize. And after working for Hudsonia, doing some turtle research, I went on to grad school at Antioch in England in Keene, New Hampshire for conservation
biology. I'm Janet Tara Begum,
which is where I work in Operation Land Trust, and you're tuned to 90.7 FM WGXC. Acre. Got a job with
Hay acciones cotidianas para ayudar a prevenir la propagación de enfermedades respiratorias. Lávese las manos. Evite el contacto cercano con las personas enfermas. Evite tocarse los ojos, la nariz y la boca. Quédese en casa cuando esté enfermo. Cúbrase al toser o estornudar. Limpie y desinfecte de manera frecuente los objetos que toca. Para obtener más información, visite cdc.gov/COVID-19. Este mensaje es gentileza de la National Association of Broadcasters y de esta estación.
WGXC Underwriting Support is provided by Gemini Construction.
So a full service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Environmental studies.
Gemini
and
Construction,
then after that I moved
serving
west
Green
to go
and surrounding counties
trees.
For over 40 years. For more information,
Council,
contact
518-622-9829. To go to grad school
WGXC
at Syracuse
is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Glen Falls House
and got
in
two
Roundtop,
master's degrees,
New York.
One in
WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's
one
most dedicated
a master's
listeners.
Of public
they care deeply about creative
and
community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information,
the area is beautiful.
Experimentation,
there's
and
so much going on at CLC
in Green and
that
counties.
I thought that's where
you
I want to
too
be.
Can become
that's
a sustaining
be
supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate
and we have
designating
a Lorax.
Now I'm going to go
thank
to basics.
You
you're obviously very wildly
overqualified. We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Of what a land trust actually is and what does a land conservancy
I am on you read.
And
jump
I'm Mike
on
Porter.
Either one of you.
You're listening to Catskill
so
Cabin COVID
I think
conversations
for most people,
on WGXC
when you hear
Acre,
land trust or land
FM.
Conservancy,
on each show,
they think about protecting
will be
land
asked to discuss
with a tool
a number
called
of items
conservation
that they
easement,
intend taking with them on their Catskill
land
Cabin
from
getaway.
Being chopped up
as we discuss the chosen
bits,
items, it is hoped that you, the
CLC
listener,
does
will enjoy
do
getting to know that person
but we
a little
also
bit
do
better.
A lot more. I'd like
today's
to say when my friends are visiting
the COVID
and we're driving around the roads of Columbia County and they look around
and
they say, look at
curve.
That beautiful farm,
Andy and
or
I will be doing something
let's go
a
hiking,
bit today.
Or
Andy
let's stop at this roadside
remotely.
Farm stand
and
get some local produce.
The songs and items
all
that
of those are
us
things
to
that
get through
CLC
this
continues
that
to make
bit
possible.
Better.
Sometimes
Andy,
the tagline we use is that
welcome
we're
to the show.
Keeping it rural.
Hello, Mike.
And that
hello.
Means that
hello, Andrew.
We provide places for people
how
to
how
don't
are you,
hike.
Mike?
I miss you.
We work with farm families. And then we support communities that are interested in.
This is helping me to appreciate contact with humans.
It's helped me to appreciate my barber.
Yeah. You know, I went out and Nicole and I, we bought some hair clippers and she gave me a haircut.
Seriously?
And she did a wonderful job. Well, I mean, as wonderful as is possible, given me.
Maybe she's missing her calling. Maybe she should have been a hairdresser.
Maybe. Yeah. You know, she did she, very, very patient, very loving, very kind. I'm very, very lucky and very blessed to have her as a wife.
Did you give her a tip?
No.
Oh, Mike, I mean, how much do you normally give your barber as a tip? About $5 or something?
About, actually only about two.
Two?
But that's because they own the place. Maybe that's still kind of cheap of me, but.
Well, maybe you should have gave her $2.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I should have. I got her a nice bunny card for Easter.
Well, that's good. That's good. I never get anything for anybody for Easter.
Yeah. Did you,
I've actually literally not been out, only for a couple of, you know, like essential things.
Yeah.
Have I been outside?
Have you been doing okay having to work remotely?
I have some problems with the, you know, the internet connection to the work's remote site.
Sure.
Every day. I think basically if everything was normal prior to this happening, there would never be the amount of people from the organization on the server at the same time.
Yeah.
So the server is kind of overloaded at times and it just freezes and kicks people off. And
oh, sure.
So I have some problems with that. So what I've tried to do is try and create myself work, save things, t- take them off the remote, just onto my own computer, and then do things there. So I kind of get around it. I try to go into the works internet as little as possible.
Yeah.
So, and that seems to make my day go a little bit more stress-free.
I did see a graphic online that showed pollution levels in urban areas are down dramatically with people driving less. That's a good thing that pollution's down. Yeah. You know, it's bittersweet. There's a whole lot of bad. And, you know, of course, I want to be sensitive to that. But know, one thing that I've noticed that's great is that healthcare professionals are being celebrated and appreciated in a way maybe like never before. I think it's really visible, you know, people applauding them and going out of their way to thank them. And I hope that is true. And I hope that they feel appreciated and know how heroic their efforts have been. You know, my mom's a nurse. My aunt is a respiratory therapist. My other aunt is a nurse.
My partner, Julia, is a nurse as well. So
I hope that they realize, you know, they are saving lives. They are heroes. Yeah. And that's not hyperbole. That's legit. And putting their lives on the line by going to the hospital every day.
One of the things I just hope that doesn't happen, and I know I'm kind of injecting a little bit of possibly cynicism into your good story, Mike, that I hope it doesn't just drift away.
Yes.
As soon as this is over, and people, 2 weeks after it's over, people are back to, you know, having the same attitude they had there too. You know, I hope this carries on and people have a deep appreciation for people in the front line.
I completely agree. I hope so too.
And I mean that about everybody. I'm not just talking about people in the medical field. I'm talking about, you know, policemen, firemen, people in the army.
Oh yeah,
you know, that stuff like that. You know, and there's other people in care field in general. My friend Amy from Rochester, she's been in Brooklyn or the Bronx for 4 weeks now. Yeah. And she's helping out in a senior facility, and she's been there for 4 weeks, and she's not seen her family.
Jeez.
So, you know, there's unsung heroes everywhere also, you know?
Yeah. Folks that help us to see the sunrise.
Yes.
And I thought maybe we can talk about our first song, Here Comes the Sun, the Beatles, George Harrison. I chose this song because it's a song of hope by one of the greatest musicians, I think, of modern history. And it comes from their 1969, the Beatles' 1969 album, Abbey Road. Harrison wrote it skipping out of a business meeting. Basically, he'd gotten tired of these meetings and went to his friend Eric Clapton's house and just walked around in the back with a guitar. And it had been a long, cold winter that year. And he said, you know, by the time spring comes, particularly in England, I guess, you know, he said that the winter, sometimes they go on forever. And by the time the spring comes, you really feel like you deserve it. So he went to Eric Clapton's house and wrote this song.
Well, it's funny you should say, can I just say before you play the song, just kind of, you know, going on from what you were saying there, I was reading a little bit about that, and it says, you know, he was saying, well, it's been a long winter and, you know, we deserve the sun. Now, the Met Office, the data from the two metropolitan meteorology stations in the London area at that time actually did some research, and it showed that April in 69 set a record for sunlight hours in the 60s. And the Greenwich station recorded 189 hours for April, a high that has not been beaten until 1984. And the Greenwich data also showed that February and March were much colder than normal for the 60s, which would account for Harrison's reference to a long, cold, lonely winter.
Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC ACRA. That's 90.7 FM. Today on the show, we are discussing the songs and items that are helping us to get through this crisis that little bit better. WGXC is community radio that relies on support from listeners like you. Please visit WGXC.org to make a donation or become a sustaining member today.
No, Mike, that was a lovely song. Now, I took the liberty. I know there's loads and loads and loads of trivia about the Beatles, but I wanted to see if I can maybe ask you a question, a couple of questions or two about the Beatles, right? You ready?
Yes.
All right. Which Beatle crossed Abbey Road first?
Oh, John Lennon?
Correct, it's John.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you.
Which Beatle married first?
Oh. Paul McCartney.
One more guess, Mike.
Benjamin Harrison. No, John Lennon. Again.
Did you say Benjamin?
I was going to say Benjamin Harrison, but John Lennon, he was married young and then he got divorced, and that's where Hey Jude comes from.
But Benjamin Harrison wasn't in the Beatles.
Oh, yeah, George Harrison. I don't know why. Benjamin Harrison, of course, was a president. No, not Benjamin Harrison.
But it was John. It was John.
It was John, yeah. Andy, I have some quick trivia before we move on.
Okay.
Here comes the sun. How many Earths could fit in the sun?
How many suns, Earths could fit in the sun?
Yeah.
800.
The answer is 1.3 million. So the sun is big. It's big. And crazy, it's small by sun standards. There are suns that are many, many times over. I think hundreds of times, thousands of times bigger than our sun.
I wonder how many of our suns could fit in another sun.
I think it's like hundreds or thousands. Yeah, I think tons.
Wow. And that is, it's hard to fathom.
It's incomprehensible, yeah. You know, these are sizes and scopes that are puny pea brains can't fathom. But one thing we can fathom, you know, we may not be traveling to touch the face of the sun. We may not touch other suns in our lifetime, but we could travel the ocean, maybe in the RMS Mauritania.
Yes. Hold on, Mike. I need to show you. Well, nobody in Radio Land would appreciate this, but I'm going to show you. It's okay. A model I have.
Yeah.
Give me a second.
Andy is walking away. I see him in the camera. He has disappeared off screen in the recesses of his room. He's now coming back. He's holding a box. On the box is a gigantic Titanic. It looks like the Titanic.
It does look like the Titanic. The Mauritania. It's a model of the Mauritania that my brother Thomas gave me.
Oh, okay. Did it do better than the Titanic? Do you know?
For Christmas.
Yeah.
I've not started it yet, but I would take that with me on my trip to the Catskills. I'm playing a little soccer game at the moment. And I've got a couple of things that I'm doing, and I've been reading a book as well. But I've got about four models there. I've got a truck. A Ford truck. I've got the Mauritania and a couple of classic cars that I could be doing. But I've not started any of them yet, but I will be.
Yeah.
So.
You know, we were talking kind of about routine and just now, how people's routines have changed. And I think that's a good thing. I think we've gotten into kind of a rut. I'd gotten into kind of a routine and a rut just as a human being. I get up, I go to school, go to work, come home, you know, Mondays and Wednesdays are my late nights. And And I think this has kind of shaken us from that and helped. It's helped me to appreciate what I have and what I had. You know, going to school is important for me. It's important to be there. And I didn't realize how important it was until I wasn't able to do it anymore.
Same with me. And, you know, it's, you know, going to the office. I think, you know, this isn't going to be the same for everybody, because there are people who hate their jobs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But certainly for me and for loads of people, and you, Mike, and, you know, other people that I know, you're right. You know, and I think what I've realized is my place of work isn't just a place I go to work. It's where I go. It's an important part of my socialization as well.
Yeah.
I go there and I meet people who I consider friends. I have a laugh. I confide in people. I chat with people. I have lunch with people, you know?
Yeah.
And when I'm there, I'm helping people. Mm. And it's difficult to be apart from that. Yeah. When you've been doing it for so long, but it's also, as you say, you're realizing, wow, I miss that.
You know, I've been talking with my wife and family about this and friends, and for all the times in history for this to happen, economically speaking, there has been no better time because of people's ability to work remotely from home. If this had happened 20 years ago, you know, people couldn't work remotely. You know, they wouldn't be able to go home and get on the internet, because the vast majority of people probably didn't have high speed internet, or there wasn't Skype or Zoom or computers or whatever. So I think the economic impacts and the social impacts, you know, now we're FaceTiming with my family out in Western New York, family in California, in the Southern Adirondacks. You can do that anytime you want. And I think we have grown critical of technology in many ways for good reason in recent history. It somehow makes things impersonal, but at the same time, it's given us this opportunity to kind of socially survive in a time where otherwise it's like, you just don't see your family. You know, at least now we still can, and we still can't, a lot of people still can work. You know, that is of course, if we have the technology. There's an inequity that has arisen that's glaringly obvious now. And maybe we can talk about that a little bit later. But it also, you know, we've been able to stay connected while also flattening the curve.
Well, my worry is that two things, Mike. The weather's going to continue to improve.
Yeah.
And we are going to get information filtering out from the media saying that the curves are flattening out.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, people are going to say, I'm going to.
Yes. Yep.
A beautiful day. Less people are getting sick. I'm going to go out. I'm going to chance it. And my worry is that then there'll be a rise again of cases and we go back to square one.
Yeah.
I think we need to be disciplined and ride it out until we're told when we can go out.
When you can, go back to the beach.
Yes. Exactly. And that's something I'm looking forward to, is going to the beach.
Uh-huh. And that's why your first song is On the Beach.
By Chris Rea.
Yeah. How come? Tell us about that.
When I was 16, I was working on in a garage in a place not far from Glasgow. And, you know, I didn't like the job. I hated the job. And I didn't, you know, I was 16. I didn't really know where my life was headed. And I was, the radio was playing every day, and it was playing all of these formulaic pop tunes.
Yeah.
And then one day, this song came on and it stopped me in my tracks. And I listened to the song. And I wouldn't say it blew me away, but as I say, it stopped me in my tracks, and I was like, that's a great, I love that song. And it acted, that weekend I went out and I found out who it was, and, you know, I bought the record, and then I done some research on the guy, Chris Rea, and I went to some secondhand stores and bought some of his old albums from the 70s. And there began my journey into trying to find quality music that wasn't necessarily what you hear on the radio, pop songs.
The place that I know
That was Chris Rea on the beach. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acre 90.7 FM. Today on the show, we are discussing the songs and items that are helping us to get through this crisis a little bit better. WGXC is community radio that relies on support from listeners like you. Please visit WGXC.org to make a donation or become a sustaining member today.
It's important for WGXC to get sustaining members, and you know, the difference between $120 and $10 is 12 months, you know, and that's the great thing about sustaining membership. If you can get yourself on that kind of schedule where you're just giving repeatedly, and that's one of the items that's been helpful to me in getting through this crisis is a daily schedule.
Yes.
You know, without having to get up and be somewhere sometime, it can be difficult to be productive. I've been reading about this in the news. People are struggling with this, working remotely.
I agree, Mike. It's you know, it's one of those things I actually discussed with my supervisor last week. You know, there are days when I find it hard to get out of bed and feel like I'm contributing.
Yeah.
And actually working. So I decided to get up out of bed and actually put clothes on as opposed to sitting about in jogging shorts and stuff in order to feel like and have a workspace where I turned the laptop on and write, you know, even if it's just three or four things that I'm going to do today. That way I feel like I'm getting stuff done and ticking a box, you know.
That's a great strategy, is to get up and put on, you know, maybe not work clothes necessarily, but clothes that maybe you would work in, things that make you feel more formal, and that makes a difference. Yep. Getting up and doing some small, manageable, achievable, accomplishing some task to get rolling. You know, when I fall into the trap of, get out of bed, have a coffee, throw on the Xbox for a couple minutes, bam, 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 and the day gets away from you, that's not great. And so for me, that's important. And making small manageable tasks and also rewarding myself. You know, when you're accountable to yourself, it can be hard to be a taskmaster or a drill instructor. So it's good to kind of dangle a carrot. And, you know, if I get this thing done, then I can take a little bit longer lunch, or I can play video games for a little bit. And I've been finding that's helpful. And you know, when you chip away at work over time, it gets done.
Yeah, I know.
I had heard about Ben Franklin's schedule in the past. He had a daily schedule that he followed. Would you be interested in hearing it?
Of course.
I was going to say it anyway, even if you weren't. And it goes 5 a.m. to 8 a.m., rise, wash, and address powerful goodness. Contrive the day's business and take the resolution of the day, prosecute the present study, and breakfast. 8 a.m. to 12 p.m., work. So 4 hours of work there. 12 to 2, read or overlook my accounts and dine. So kind of a relaxation period there from 12 to 2. From 2 to 6 p.m., work again, another 4 hours. And then from 6 to 10 p.m., put things in their place, have supper, listen to music or any other diversion, maybe, you know, I guess play games or hang out with friends, conversation, examine the day, see how you did, and then sleep from 10 to 5. So get a solid 7 hours of sleep. And every day he'd ask himself, what good shall I do during his breakfast? And at the end of the day, he would look back and say, what good have I done? And it seemed to work for him. I was looking up about procrastination. I think when people work remotely and they're not held accountable, they can tend to procrastinate. And procrastination is actually, it's an emotional response. You know, it's not work we're avoiding, it's the emotions caused by the work. We procrastinate when we feel anxiety about something, or we're confused, or we're bored by a task.
I don't know, mate. We'll talk about it later. Yeah.
Aha! And it makes, so avoiding the task at the time, you feel a little better, but then you get behind with the task and things snowball, and then you feel worse and worse. And Andy, I wanted to ask you. You are a wonderful academic writer.
Oh, come on now.
How many master's degrees do you have?
Well, two.
Two. Okay, so two master's degrees. you could not afford to procrastinate.
Well, actually, it's funny you should say that, but I procrastinate, or when I was a student, I procrastinated a lot. And I think a lot of the time it's because I knew that once I started an essay or a piece of academic work, it was a huge undertaking and, you know, I hated getting into it. So what I did was I asked myself the question, when do I need to be started writing?
Yeah.
And say, for example, it was 8:30. Then I needed to be up by 6:30 in order to get myself wakened up, have breakfast, and have a procrastination period of time.
Yeah.
So that I could begin at the time after I procrastinated and start.
Yeah.
And then I finished. I did not write anything at night. I finished about 5 o'clock like it was a job, and I enjoyed my night guilt-free.
Yeah, that's great.
Always did that.
And were there times during the day where you're like, geez, I just don't feel like writing anymore?
Oh, absolutely.
And how do you get over that?
How do I get over that? I get up and I walk away. I would get up and I'd walk around the garden. I'd make myself a cup of coffee, a cup of tea. Now, one thing you need to remember, Mike, and you know this, 3 hours of frustration at night will be achieved in 1 hour in the morning.
Yes. Yes.
So it's okay to walk away.
So, but anyways, I got thinking when I first started teaching, you know, for me, teaching is hard. It's a hard job, and it requires a lot of work, a lot of time, and getting into it. I was teaching to start U.S. history, economics, and AP U.S. history, which for someone just out of the blocks, that's a lot. And I talked to my predecessor, and I was like, "Dude, did you ever sleep?" And he said, "You know, actually, I slept a lot," and that jolted me. It shocked me because I was expecting him to say, "I didn't sleep at all," and I realized that if I could budget my time and force myself to get good sleep, I would be far more effective during the day. And since I started working and teaching, I've really tried to prioritize sleep. And so far it's worked out okay. And yep. That's my next song is titled Sleep. It's by Eric Whitaker's Virtual Choir 2.0. And I chose this because it is a conglomeration. It's a mix of YouTube videos that each individual singer submitted independently. It's a mix of voices from all over the world. I think it's 1,752 different voices in this choir. And it's an illustration of our time where, despite how far apart we are, despite social distancing and isolation, we can still be connected. And I also like classical music. I like choir music. And I just think it's a really, really beautiful song.
It is absolutely fantastic, Mike. Now, I didn't realize the extent of this guy's work. Edward Whitaker.
I didn't realize the
extent of his work that, you know, he'd made a series of virtual choirs ranging, you know, from at the beginning. What was it? How many people?
I think it's 1,752 different voices.
Yeah, and the latest one he did was something like 8,409 videos from 5,905 people from 101 different countries.
Yeah,
it's phenomenal, really.
Yeah,
and you know. One thing I just want to highlight, when I was looking at this, do you realize, Mike, that he created a virtual youth choir in association with UNICEF, launched at the Glasgow 2014 Commonwealth Games?
I did not see that.
Yeah. Oh, featured 2,292 singers aged 18 and under from 80 countries.
Cool.
So there you are. Fantastic. And it's a beautiful song. It really is. Beautiful piece of music.
That was Eric Whitaker's Virtual Choir 2.0 performing Sleep. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC ACRA. That's 90.7 FM. Today on the show, we are discussing the songs and items that are helping us to get through this crisis that little bit better. WGXC is community radio that relies on support from listeners like you. Please visit WGXC.org to make a donation or become a sustaining member today.
Mike.
Yes.
I was looking through the internet today.
Yeah.
And some of the things that people post are just weird.
Oh, yeah.
For example, on Etsy, you know that website people have virtual shops?
Oh, sure.
Somebody's got a virtual shop on Etsy selling COVID art.
Oh, good heavens. Okay.
And COVID, like, teddies, if you like. You know, that little... It's like
virus. This is all art of the virus and squeezables of the virus.
It's like, why you would? Who does these things? Who sits in the house and thinks, you know what I'm going to do? But even worse than that, who buys it?
Well, you know, I may have gone online and purchased a few cuddly items. I won't specify how many, but the number's between 15 and 27.
For Christmas?
Yeah. Well, you know, I thought, oh, yeah, no, I don't know. I don't find... So my next item is a book. And I've actually already read this book. It's UFOs by Leslie Keen. My wife bought this for me, and it's awesome. It's about sightings and experiences that people, particularly generals, pilots, and government officials, have had or can provide testimony about all over the world. And one of the most notable experiences is the 1997 Phoenix Lights over Phoenix, Arizona, which was actually witnessed by the governor at the time of Arizona, Fife Symington. At the time, he kind of made light of it. He lampooned the whole ordeal and brought his an aide or another, I can't remember who the guy's name in his position, but brought him into a press conference dressed as an alien, and he said, oh, we found the culprit, and he had the guy handcuffed in the alien costume. And it really insulted a lot of people, because people say that they saw a physical object, huge physical object, like a mile wide at least, hovering silently, floating silently over Phoenix, Arizona. And he didn't take them seriously. And then years later, like a decade later, he came out and said, and has said, has maintained an interview since, he saw it. It was a physical object, and he maintains it was not of this world. So I suppose that provided some vindication to a lot of the witnesses from 1997. But, you know, like you had said before, you know, hopefully from this crisis, I hope that we can come together as a people. We can focus more on humanity and on health and on people's well-being. I hope that we don't forget it. Like, we forget some of these things that happen. You know, this 1997, that was maybe one of the, it could be, you know, one of the most important events in human history. And we just kind of blew it off and went about our daily lives without recognizing it for what it was. And, you know, I hope that we recognize some of the things that I've seen. African-Americans have been disproportionately affected by this disease. In Louisiana, for example, African-Americans have been 70% of deaths, but they're only 33% of the population there. That is a societal, what's the word for it? It's a travesty.
Yes.
You know, that you would have this population, this whole thing is a tragedy, but to affect a population in that way, there's something gross going on there. And I hope that this is so overt that we recognize it and we do things to fix it. And when we get through it, we're not just like, oh, well, that was a bummer, and we just go back to life as usual.
The biggest travesty.
Yeah, yes.
This is an opportunity for us to look at how we function as a society, as a world.
Yeah.
And collectively come together and say, some things need to change.
Yes.
And we need to open ourselves up. Now, one thing I was going to say when you were talking, one of the things I wanted to say was that John Podesta,
yes,
long-time presidential counselor and chair of the 2016 Hillary Clinton presidential campaign,
yes,
wrote the foreword for Keane's book.
That's right.
And he said, the time to pull the curtain back on the subject is long overdue. Describing himself, he said, a curious skeptic who understands the difference between fact and fiction. He said, the American people want to know and they can handle the truth.
Yeah.
And it's not just about this. That's, to me, that's profound for everything in our lives.
Yeah.
Well, we know the difference between fact and fiction, and we, you know, we can handle it.
Yes.
Just tell us.
Yes.
And you know what's the worst that's going to happen if they say yes, there's aliens? People are going to buy loads of toilet paper for a couple of weeks, and then they're going to go over it.
Yeah. But the toilet paper. Oh, heavens, Andy. Heavens to Betsy. But hey, at least chocolate hasn't been a top priority for hoarders.
Yeah, I know. Chocolate.
And that's
chocolate and coffee.
Yeah.
For me.
and you would take milk chocolate, none of the healthy dark stuff.
No. You know, I think one of the things about this COVID virus is it's made me cut to the chase. Mm-hmm. No. Sometimes I eat dark chocolate because people say, it's good for you.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be good. You know, if I want to eat healthy, I'm going to eat Brussels sprouts. No, I'm sitting watching TV and I want to eat chocolate. I don't want to think about being healthy.
Yeah.
I want to eat it and enjoy it. Cadbury's chocolate is what I want to eat.
And you've gotten some of the candy-coated eggs, I presume, for Easter.
Oh, yeah. Well... Can I just say they're gone?
Yeah, we got 3 bags. Polish those off.
Oh, dear. I have about, you know, those little boxes that have like the cream eggs in them?
Oh, yeah.
Well, Julia bought me a couple of them and I've still got about 3 of the eggs left.
Boy, those things are decadent, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Holy moly, it's just...
How do you eat your egg?
I just take a bite right out of the half of it, eat the top half, and then... Half
scoop,
the bottom.
Do you scoop the cream out with your tongue?
I usually, maybe a little bit if it's becoming like unwieldy. But generally, I try to keep an equal ratio of cream to chocolate. The Cadbury eggs, they're you know, it's that kind of like thick. I don't know the word, but it's kind of a
fondant.
Yeah, you know, and I have to be kind of careful because it'll get jammed up in my teeth if I bite down too hard or like cram, you know, hit the top of the roof of my mouth. So I got to be careful with my strategy for consuming Cadbury eggs. Otherwise, it just ends up all over the place. It's jammed up in my gums. And
you know those, the little tiny eggs?
Yeah.
The ones that look like almonds?
Yeah.
Sugared almonds. Mm-hmm. How do you eat one of them?
Just pop it right in.
No, but do you just crunch right into it?
Yes.
Well...
Carefully though, because if I do it wrong, sometimes I'll bite my tongue or my cheek because they kind of like it'll roll around in your mouth, and so it'll be like, come on, jeez.
No, I actually most of the time I put one in at a time.
Yes,
and I soak the little egg and kind of dislodge the shell. Crack the,
that's a good
roll
idea.
It around in my tongue, yeah. Crack the shell, and then take all the shell off, crunch that and finish it, then soak the chocolate.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Safer that way.
This is killing me, Mike. I just need some chocolate now.
If only we could get out of this place, we could go buy some. But we're social distancing.
Yes, I know.
Isolated. And we can't. But your next song, the last song, is... The animals, we got to get out of this place.
Yeah. You know, the more I've been talking, Mike, about how these, what's happening in our world, and we're talking about positivity and we're talking about good things coming out of this, it's kind of making this song kind of contradictory to what we've been preaching.
Everyone, this has all just been a show. We have no faith in humanity or the future, and we just want out. If Elon Musk has, in fact, gotten a rocket ready for Mars, I'd like one seat, please. Two.
Yeah, my wife will go. I'm actually sitting here surrounded by toilet paper.
In this sturdy old part of the city, where the sun refused to shine, people tell me there ain't no use in trying. Now my girl, you're so young and pretty, and one thing I know is true, you'll be dead before your time is due. One thing I know is true, yeah, you'll be dead before your time is due. Know it. Watch my dad.
That was We Gotta Get Out of This Place by the Animals. Good song.
You know, Andy, they were part of the British invasion of the 1960s, 1970s. And I can't get a hint of English accent. The lead singer there is Eric Burdon, I think his name is.
Right.
And I thought he was like from America, from the South.
Well, see, the thing is about accents, when you look at a lot of British acts, they were very, very heavily influenced by American artists. So when they sang, they tended to sing in an American accent.
Yeah.
No, everybody, but a lot of people did. So it's very difficult to understand if they're... And when you think about it, a lot of people from Britain who sing an American accent, it's a kind of a generic accent, a generic American accent. It's not, you know, particular of the South or the East or the West or whatever. These guys were actually from, I believe, Newcastle upon Tyne.
Yeah.
They normally have an accent like that, man.
Okay.
And they're called Geordies.
Oh, why is that?
I don't know why they're called Geordies. I don't know the history of the word Geordie, but people from Newcastle are called Geordies. So that's what they were. People from Liverpool, for example, the Beatles, they speak Liverpudlian.
Can you say that again, Andy? Sorry.
They're from people from Liverpool. They're called Scousers.
And it's people like the Beatles.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I know you can do a good Beatles accent.
I feel bad about it. I just have so much respect, and I do enjoy it. It's one of my guilty pleasures.
I like to talk like George Harrison.
I must admit, it makes me laugh.
I think that's kind of how he sounded.
You're actually not bad at it, I'll be honest with you.
No, thank you. If I insult anyone, I do apologize. I don't mean to, but it's all with the best of intentions and out of love. Love and admiration. I find it very, very endearing.
Unlike me, Mike Porter, I sure can say a hard R.
R. R.
R. R.
Do that, Mike.
R.
R.
R. Gosh, talking is hard.
Hard.
Well, we've come to the end.
You have indeed, Michael. We could talk for hours.
Boy, we could. You know, I thought that this would be kind of a challenge, and it's actually gone really well.
It has indeed.
And I've enjoyed it thoroughly.
Me too.
And I'm thankful that we could make it happen.
It's the beauty of technology in this day and age. You mentioned it earlier. You know, if this was the 90s, for example, then it would be a non-starter, really. Yeah. Our show wouldn't be on.
Right. I'm thankful for that.
It's fantastic in that respect. And I think maybe one of the things about COVID and self-isolation is that we've been forced into realizing the potential of the technology we have, and that we can maybe open up other avenues that we wouldn't normally have had time to look at.